Now on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville, it's time for the only area radio show devoted exclusively to football. That is to say, soccer.
Local, MLS, Premier League, and international.
It's Blokes on the Bench, and you can reach us at 434-284-9470 or at facebook.com/blokesonthebench. Now here's your host, Andy Richardson.
All right, guys, welcome along to another edition of the show. Before we start, obviously the sad news, the passing on Thursday of Graham Taylor, England manager. He wasn't just the England manager, obviously. He was the manager of Watford from 1977 to 1987. Aston Villa manager from 1987 to 1990. And then, of course, he got the job as the England manager 1990 to 1993. And then he went to Wolves 1994 to 95, one season there. And then from 96 to 2001, back to Watford. And then one season from 2002 to 2003 with Aston Villa. Ryan, obviously you're English. You're an England supporter. I mean, what did he mean to you?
Well, I mean, it was right at the time. I was only like, I think I was like 6 years old when he got the England job. And the only thing I can remember from those days were like... Basically, we failed to qualify for the 94 World Cup in the US, and that was mainly due to us not being able to beat San Marino by 7 goals, even though we beat them 7-1. And they scored literally after probably 9 seconds, I think it was, a shoddy back pass from Stuart Pearce. But he was, you know, all the players only have like good things to say about him. He was a really nice guy. They did show some clips and stuff. I think John Barnes was getting like severely booed one game. And he turns around to a fan and tells him to just check himself because he's talking right. about another human yeah. being right there. So he's like, you know, he's the nice guy of football. And he always used to come out and say that the only time he ever felt like he really belonged is when he was either on the pitch or at a football ground. So... yeah, he was football through and through. So, yeah, it was sad to hear of his passing at 72 years old, yeah.
I know that he was not treated fairly by the press. I mean, obviously there's criticism, but then there's taking it to another level. The British press can be pretty brutal, especially, like you said, as a nice guy. And I think he took that personally. You know, I know that he had a lot of regrets, and I think he went to the grave with them about how he didn't get England to the World Cup 94. But anyway, moving on, obviously that put a tone in for this weekend, with people obviously paying their respects before each game.
Yeah, especially like the Villa game and the Watford game
right.
yesterday, yeah. Great scenes, actually.
Yeah. All right, guys, so first game, Tottenham versus West Brom. This is what I think, right? If you're a top six team... the way that Tottenham played on Saturday set the scene. It set the tone. You have to boss the games. If you want to stay top six, if you want to be a title contender, you just have to be beating teams left, right, and centre. And like they were all talking about, well, first of all, congratulations to Harry Kane. He had a baby last Sunday. Obviously, those late nights did not do anything because he got a hat trick. But honestly, they were so dangerous in the penalty box. I thought... honestly, at the end of the first half, I thought it could have been 7-0.
Yeah. Yeah, I said when I finished watching that game, I was like, it could have easily have been 7-8-0. They're just so dangerous.
Right, and the way that Ali, Harry, and to an extent, obviously, to Eriksen as well, but the way the three of them work as well, it's the way they gel, it's just dangerous.
The wing-backs for me.
Yeah.
That like Danny Rose and Kyle Walker completely just... set the tone for that team. Like two wing back defenders who arguably two of the best at what they do in probably Europe at the moment. Just brilliant, different level stuff. But they're just so intense. They play with such high intensity, high energy levels. Credit where credit's due. Pochettino's got them firing on absolute all cylinders. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of speculation that pair might be moving to Manchester, either City or United for you boys.
I don't think they're going.
I'll take them.
I mean, we would take them, but they're not going, I don't think.
I'll take them.
I think they're
enjoying it too much. Yeah. Like when you see, I know a lot of things like social media and that they, the four of those guys, Walker, Rose, Ali, and Kane, they seem to always be in each other's pictures. Yep. I think they're like a really, you know, they're all similar age. Yeah, I think they're just loving playing together at the moment. And I don't think, you know, they want to upset the apple cart, so to speak, with one of them leaving. So
I mean, but the thing is, there was absolutely no fight in the dog for West Brom. Nothing.
No, they're poor.
But, like, they had two wasted free kicks in the same area, same result, straight into Eriksen's face or body.
Yeah.
I mean, they were just outpaced, outperformed, out of position.
Yeah.
And I mean, like they said it on the TV, like Tottenham were just a machine.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, they were just all over them. And actually, Ben, it was funny when, you know, Ben Foster actually had a stormer in goal.
Four
goals.
I was just about to say, like, that second half for him, like, he could have easily, if he wasn't on form, he was looking sharp. They could have easily been looking at, you know, 5, 6, 7 goals.
Yeah. And that put him what? That took Spurs up to second place, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, fair play to them.
All right, well, next game at the London Stadium, West Ham. Now, going into this game, there was a lot of stuff still going on, obviously, between Payet and we don't... Is it Marseille that is interested?
Marseille, yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand. I mean, I don't follow the French league, I have to be honest. I don't know where their ranking is in the French league, but I would have thought West Ham would have been a big enough club to stay at, unless it's money.
It's clearly not money. The bid was pretty low.
Yeah. Yeah. Me and Mark just spoke about this before we came in here. If I was West Ham and you have a player who's 29 years old coming up to 30 who says, I don't want to play for you anymore, let's be honest, in the past 18 months, has been absolutely raved about because he's been brilliant. I mean, this year hasn't really done anything.
Great Euros, too.
Yeah. If I was West Ham right now, I'd come out and say... Dimitri Payet is for sale. We won't be selling him until, I don't know, pick a date right near the end of the calendar, like at the end of the month, probably like the 28th, something like that. And so we're open to offers and then just start an all-out bidding war because I wouldn't accept 18 million from Marseille for him.
There's definitely plenty of suitors. I would say we were just looking at an article as well. There's been talk of him coming to Arsenal. Wenger's a big fan. And the fee that they threw out was about 35. And Wenger very rarely spends that much money, and I especially don't think he'll spend that on a 29-year-old. But, you know, some of these other clubs that are fighting for positions in either Europe or trying to stay up, you know, who knows? It might be more in the 20 to 30 range. But Marseille... 18 is just, I think, a little too low.
Yeah. I mean, when you say stuff like that, I think about, you know, when Van Persie made the switch to United from Arsenal, I think it was around 20, 22 mil, something like that, for a, I think he was 30 at the time.
And 29, 30, yeah.
Yeah, and everyone was like, that's a lot of money for a 29, 30-year-old. But the thing is, you're buying a proven goal scorer.
And he won you all the title.
He literally won us the league. With Payet, are you not going to spend... There's no way you're going to spend 35 million on a 29-year-old. Yeah, he's a great player, but he's not a 20 goal a season guarantee. He's a good attraction.
He might set up a lot of goals, but he's not going to bang those in himself.
You know, he'll get the crowd going and they'll be happy to have him, but in my opinion, I think 25 max, and it would have to be a big club. I'm talking like, it's not going to be Barca, but, you know, like a Real, maybe an Atletico, maybe a Paris Saint-Germain.
Well, PSG already spent their money on Draxler, who's doing well.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a good game, West Ham. I mean, obviously, Andy Carroll's goal. But my man of the match has to be Antonio.
Yeah.
He was assisting all of them.
Yeah.
Took it round the keeper for the first goal and passed it to Fugoli.
Yeah.
57th minute for a tap-in. And Lanzini passed the keeper on the counter.
That was a great chip.
Great one.
Yeah. So I don't think they're going to miss him, to be honest.
No, I mean, that was the thing as well. You're looking for, when you have that kind of disturbance behind the scenes before a game. And it's a big game as well. Both of these two teams, Palace and West Ham, they're not, you know, they haven't really done anything this year. And they, you know, I was worried about at least, well, I'm still worried a little bit about Palace, especially now they got Big Sam. But, you know, Big Sam going back to West Ham yesterday, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that was, that Payet situation is something that you really didn't want going into a game like this, because it was a big game for them, for both teams. But yeah, West Ham. First half wasn't great. I think Carroll had a few opportunities. I think he should have scored, actually, in the, late in that first half. But second half, they were just absolutely brilliant. And like you say, that Andy Carroll strike, I like it because it's a left peg, isn't it? That was beaut, mate.
Lefty.
Get him. Absolute bullet in the top corner. Hennessy, absolutely no chance. But
you ever scored one losing your day, Ryan?
No, not anything like that, mate. Not even going to try and lie to you.
I have seen some rumors of Antonio maybe going on the move, not necessarily maybe in this window, but over the summer.
He's been one of the most
promising, very
he's
promising.
He's been one of the most consistent players in the Premier League this all season. Every time, literally every time West Ham have a good game, his name's thrown in there. He scores goals, he scores headers. I think it was like the first time in something like 16 years that a West Ham player had set up three goals in one game. Previous to that, I think it was Di Canio. I'm going to say it was like back in like 2001, something like that. But yeah, I like him. He looks good. And I know he had, I think he's got like one England cap. I think he came on for friendly not too long ago. I think he's one to watch.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to the next game that actually had a similar situation going on with Costa.
Obviously. Diego.
Diego. Is he going anywhere? Is he going to China? I mean, realistically, I don't think he is.
I don't know.
Apparently, there was a report that came out from the dressing room or, you know, somewhere back behind the scenes at Chelsea that Conte's English isn't very good, but apparently they were able to make out, okay, go to China, yelling. So, you know, he was pretty unsettled in the summer, definitely unsettled all last season, you know, after winning the trophy. And then the defense of that, I think, got to a lot of the players at Chelsea with the managerial position. And
yeah, but I think Conte brought the best out of him. I think he was going.
I absolutely agree.
He was not causing any trouble. In fact, he was, if anything, being the peacemaker even. Conte just tapped him in the back and said, look, you got a job to do. This is what I want you to be. You know, you're a very important player to me, and give him that encouragement. And he's put that performance on.
Yeah, he's been really, you know, I don't personally like the guy.
Top of the league for goals.
But yeah, he's been banging him in. He's been playing really good, actually. Yeah. More than just sticking the ball in the net, actually, this year. My biggest thing is I'm never quite sure how old he is, because I've seen, you know, because when he was 14 he looked about 25, so I don't know how old is he. Is he about 20? What is he? 26 maybe? 27?
I think that's about the range. Yeah.
I mean, if I was him, honestly, if I
get
was
some moisturizer on his face and just like, you know,
I'm telling you, if I was him, I'd be tempted. I mean, the amount of money they're talking about paying him, 30 million a year, go play in the next 3 years out there. You know, 3.5 years, make yourself 100 million. You know, I don't know, I'd be tempted.
Right, but, I mean, I understand if you're 30, but again, I actually don't know his age either.
I feel like we should be talking about Payet going to China, not Costa. Like, I think the only player that's really, and I know we're probably going to get into more of this later in the show with the money coming in from China and tempting players to leave. So far, the really only big name, and I wouldn't even say it's a big name, you know, Oscar from the same club has left. And
I mean, he wasn't getting that much game time, but he was still young enough.
I mean, I feel like he's doing what Ryan was just saying, like, I'm going to go make a cool, you know,
$50 million.
Back in the prime of his career and probably play for Juve or, you know, some kind of club, because Juve's had interest in him over the last couple of years. It's not just this season, but over the last couple of years, you've definitely heard Oscar's name
and it's
in
not
the
just
whole maybe leave Chelsea thing. Right. So,
and the thing you got to remember as well, it's not just a football thing. It's not just a football thing going out to China. Like, they're going to make, they're going to make all this money. And their kind of like investment opportunities over there.
Like Beckham with a club or something like that, like putting money
in. Just whatever it might be, real estate over there. Everything's just over there, just seems to be going absolutely mental for like the past 10 years. And if you can get your foot in there and someone's going to pay you $50 million over 2 years and you can like maybe...
Yeah, in the property market or something.
Yeah, like pump $20 million back into an investment, make a cool, I don't know, another 50, 60 mil. I mean, all those opportunities are there. It's not just about the football. And like I said, you know, Oscar was probably at Chelsea making, let's say, 100K a week, maybe. Not really getting much game time. He's going to play every week. He's going to be the biggest star at Shanghai or wherever it is he went to.
People following him
around. And he's going to get paid $450,000 a week.
Yeah.
It's mental.
We haven't even actually got onto the game yet. By the way, don't forget you are tuning into Blokes on the Bench.
Oh, yeah. 24/7.
Yeah. You can get in contact with us 4342 849 470. We are on Facebook Live, by the way, as well, on our Facebook page. Facebook.com/Ryan is... What are you doing?
I was just reading some of the things.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You should read them out. Facebook.com/blokes on the bench. And have we actually got any comments?
Just something about hearing Mike in the background. He's gone now, though. I'm right. So, yeah, the Chelsea game, the biggest thing. So the Costa, same with the West Ham thing. This was a massive game for Chelsea, coming off the back of that defeat to Spurs. Needed to put in a performance away at, you know, the defending champions Leicester, and without a recognised striker, your favourite. But
false nine.
But to be fair, the three that they played, Willian came in for Costa, was like the one change from the Spurs game. So you got Willian, Pedro, and Hazard up front, and all three of them were absolutely brilliant.
You were saying something interesting about them rotating.
Yeah, because then not one of them is an out and out target man. Centre forward.
There's a lot every of rotation
10,
up front.
Every 10 minutes, they would just do a clockwise rotation, and which was just... And they all played so well, like the understanding
kind of
between
Pedro,
them.
Pedro, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Coming from just, Barca, I think he's kind of used to that. They've been known to do that from time to time.
Yeah. And they were brilliant. Brilliant from start to finish. And like I said, it really kind of threw the Leicester defence off, because... you know, those two centre backs for Leicester are from the old school, where you're usually playing against two forwards. That's my man, that's your man, and you're going to follow him wherever he goes. When you play that rotation of three up there, you never really know who to, and you're passing somebody on so many times. But it worked perfectly for them. They played great.
Yeah,
team to beat, really, to be honest.
And I think the same with West Ham. Like, once that player leaves, it's like the whole unit as a team basically gets stronger and kind of...
Well, you have to pull together, don't you?
Right, like a bubble around yourselves to kind of like play on. And they had something to prove. Like they weren't, you know, going to get beaten and drop off. Anyway, guys, the time is now 6:20. We'll be right back. All right, guys, welcome back to Blokes on the Bench. All right, so the next game, Vicarage Road, Watford versus Middlesbrough. Obviously, this meant something to...
Yeah, the Watford boys. You had Graham Taylor's wife, his daughter, and I think some other family members were invited along to the game. Emotional scenes at the start, obviously, for them. It's a shame, you know, the game ended 0-0, but it wasn't actually a boring game. First, it was a bit cagey the first 25 minutes or so, and then it started to get a lot better towards the end of the first half. A couple of decent chances. But the second half was actually really, really good. Watford had some really good chances. Kapu should have scored actually in the first half. Terrible touch. Put it straight to Valdez. Cleverly hit the post and then Kapu blasted
cleverly.
It over.
I want to get the cleverly.
Okay, hang on. And then you had Troy Deeney clean through. Yeah, he's on loan.
Okay.
And then you had Troy Deeney clean through and Valdez just gets a nick off his left boot and it goes past the post. But Valdez played really well. And then for Middlesbrough, there was a start for Rudy Gusted, who they signed from Villa, who I thought was actually pretty decent at Villa last year. In when he first came, looked like a, you know, tall, powerful centre forward, but obviously just didn't really get much service. And he came on, he looked like he had a couple of decent touches, a couple of good efforts.
Yeah.
So I think that's a pretty smart buy from Middlesbrough. But yeah, it ended 0-0. But like I said, second half, that
Negredo had one called off, right? It was, I think, offsides, maybe. I think he dinked it in the back of the net. And,
right, yeah, I think there was...
Flag was up.
Yeah.
So the question about Cleverley I have, all right? Tom Cleverley, all right?
Yeah.
He joins Man United in 2008, and he stays until 2015.
Yeah.
Within that span, right?
Yeah.
2009, he goes on loan to Leicester City. 2010, he goes on loan to Watford.
Yeah.
2011, to Wigan Athletic.
Yeah.
And then on loan to Aston Villa from 2014 to 2015. Then he's bought by Everton last year, and now he's on loan again at Watford. I think he's 27?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was right around the Jack Wilshere. They kind of broke out of the scene at the same time.
What does that say for a player of that age to be on loan to so many different clubs and just be thrown around like that, like a hot pancake?
I mean, there's a few players like that, though.
Is that a good thing? Is it about, if you're him, you're like,
it's not necessarily a good thing because you want to sign for a club, and right, this is my home now. This is where I want to play my career.
It disrupts your play.
But look, at the end of the day, if Koeman thinks that okay, he is kind of still in my thoughts, but I want to send him on loan so he can get first team Premier League, first team, not really experience. He's got plenty of experience. It's just.
Game time.
Yeah. Getting that sharpness back, getting that thing back. And he came on and, like I said, hit the post. Probably should have scored, really.
Yeah, he hasn't really had a whole lot of injury problems, correct? I mean, and I feel like Everton has quite a few players kind of in that vein that are maybe keeping him off the pitch.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, Koeman just spent, what, $22 million on Morgan Schneiderlin.
Like, which I think was a good buy.
Yeah, you're not gonna stick him on the bench and play cleverly. You just don't spend that kind of money and not have that player have a starting spot. So I think that the addition of Schneiderlin coming in for Everton is a key reason why I think Cleverley had to go and seek football there. And you know what? If he gets... Watford is probably the club for him, to be honest. I think if he can put in some decent performances there, and he's definitely going to bolster their midfield with his experience and what he can do. I think that might end up maybe being a permanent deal in the summer. Just all depends how he gets on and what.
Yeah, Watford is definitely a club on the rise. I don't know. I know some of us saw it, but if you can somehow get your hands on it, maybe on demand. Watford Behind the Badge that NBC Sports Network really did was a great insight on how football clubs run. And having watched, I think they did a marathon over the holidays at some point in time. Mm-hmm. I watched a couple in a row back to back. And
I'm getting their shirt.
Definitely.
I'm actually a fan.
He's going to get a Deeney shirt. We'll have to wait for Andy's birthday maybe to get him that. But but yeah, I mean, that documentary definitely showed the club's is on the rise and their ambitions and where they're trying to go with this. And Capu was a good signing from Tottenham, and Deeney still has some time in him, and maybe Cleverley. I think that's the one thing Watford has been missing is someone that can kind of bolster the midfield.
I hope he does well.
The one thing I will say though, like, and I watched the same thing, the impression I got, and of course, every club says they are, but very community-oriented, and you've seen it through the show. They were going out to schools and kind of bringing people in, and local people were volunteering, in the stands and stuff. But, yeah.
I think they had, a trivia night, too.
Yeah,
like,
where the team players hand out the sheets and stuff.
Yeah.
But also, wasn't there some interesting fact about they're the most international team?
I think they have the most different nationalities of any Premier League club. Arsenal's normally pretty up there with that. But
that must be a nightmare, especially for a manager who doesn't.
And hey, they have English. The kicker here is they got the Rocket Man's approval. Sir Elton John has there a stand at the stadium.
Yeah.
Well, he's part owner, isn't he?
Yeah. He saved the club back in mid-2000s, was it? He put a concert on. Anyway. Moving on to the next game, I have to move on. Burnley versus Southampton. Did you get to see this one?
I did see this game, yeah.
Joey Barton. Yeah, straight through. Fraser Foster was,
It was one of those where...
Tom Heaton, though. Two amazing saves.
Heaton was brilliant, yeah. And you had Keane with a couple of goal line clearances. Burnley actually defended really well. Mm-hmm. They didn't... Southampton actually made a change for this game. Rodriguez went back on the bench and they started with Shane Long up front, which I'm not too questionable about, but I do think Jay Rodriguez played really well. I feel like
you got to play the last hot hand.
But yeah, the Joey Barton, he comes on, and I think he was on the pitch for 2 minutes and then gets a free kick, and you know, it comes off Hendricks' rear end and wrong foots Foster and just out of his grasp, really, because Foster takes a huge step to his right, and then obviously trying to scurry back to his left, and it was just kind of out of his reach. But yeah, it was kind of, I'm actually a bit of a Joey Barton fan these days. Back when he was like 21, 22, he was probably the most annoying footballer around. But he's a bit older. He's actually a very intelligent guy. He's actually a pretty smart
Does he rival Chris Smalling?
He's probably no Chris.
Hello.
Chris, who loves getting his degrees. Yeah. Coming out of his ear holes. But yeah, Barton's actually a pretty interesting character when you listen to him talk and like the way he thinks about different situations. Is he a loose cannon? Absolutely. He's always going to be. He's always going to be. And that's one of his draws. That's kind of why you get decent performances out of him. But he came on and he was the difference maker. And, you know, like you said, Southampton had their chances, but Tom Heaton was just, you know.
Send him and Costa to China. You get a lot of TV ratings there.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, guys, don't forget you're tuning in to Blokes on the Bench here on 94.7. You can get in contact with us, 434-284-9470. Also, we're going Facebook Live. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them. You can get that on facebook.com/blokesonthebench. All right, so let's move on. I was going to say it was a surprising result, but really, two teams that are... Well, actually, you know what? I take that back. This was a surprising result. Hull versus Bournemouth.
I was going to say this was the only result that really shocked me more than this one this weekend was probably the
Man City.
Yeah, the Everton Man City. But yeah, Bournemouth. I mean, 3 goals up against the Arsenal, let the Arsenal back in, and then again against Hull, and they went 1-0 up. They had a penalty after like not 100 seconds or something ridiculous.
2 minutes, yeah, 49 like, or something.
Like Stanislas buries it after a couple of minutes, and then Abel Hernandez, I think, bagged one to get him back in it, and then actually scored about 5 minutes after the break.
Really, kick it around
really
the keeper.
Good, really good finish, yeah. And then who wrapped
Mings.
Up that?
Mings.
Oh, own goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, completely. I felt sorry for
that
him.
That was his debut as well. He's only like...
He comes off Huddleston.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, shot. Huddleston with a strike.
The old but
I felt sorry for him. The box was pretty congested, and it came off somebody, and it just happened to be him.
Yeah, but Bournemouth, they had some good chances as well, Phoebe in the first half, but didn't put the ball in there. And listening to Eddie Howe after the game, like, you know, concerns about conceding 3 goals back-to-back. In games, defending pretty poorly, which is something you don't associate with his team, usually being so well organized.
Really good at pressing, too.
Yeah. And, like, you know, the midfield actually, like Jack Wilshere and Arta, their like organization in the first half was brilliant, looked really good. I was like, okay. Even after Hernandez had scored to get him back in it, I was thinking, okay, Bournemouth is still going to do this because they look so. So well organized. And second half, those two were just all over the place. Yeah, and fair play to Hull. They needed that first win in 10 Premier League matches.
Did Ake get called back to Chelsea?
He's at Chelsea. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I knew that they were talking about that.
Yeah,
but
he's back at Chelsea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, like I said, I'm glad to see that Hull got the point as well. Points.
But Ake will be a huge loss for them.
Absolutely, yeah. Both boxes.
Yeah.
So the next game, Stoke versus Sunderland at the Stadium of Light. This was, again, a good game, 3-1 to Stoke. Was it Defoe scored? Well, Defoe actually got a goal on the counter-attack.
Yeah.
I actually can't pronounce the guy's name.
Arnautovic,
yeah, that's
Arnautovic. Zlatan wannabe.
With a new haircut, actually.
He gets the first two, and then... This was the stupidest mistake I've ever seen. The goalkeeper comes out. The ball is coming in high.
Oh, Manone, yeah, he just...
Right.
Former Arsenal keeper.
I wanted to ask
you this, right, Ryan, as somebody that's played as a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
What does he do differently? Can he do something differently?
The golden rule is no matter what the result of what you're about to try and do, if you make a decision in your head to do something, you go 100%. As soon as you go, stop, and then try and go again,
sticks.
You're done. You don't deserve to make a save. You don't deserve to get to the ball. You don't. Well,
that's what happened with the Reading goalkeeper against Manchester United in the FA Cup last week.
Yeah, you just, yeah. So, yeah, he's, you know, that cross is coming in. And all he's thinking about is Peter Crouch. And Crouchy, fair play to him. Still got to stick the ball in the net. Great header. In off the foot of the post.
That's
his 99th league goal.
There nothing really that the goalkeeper could have done?
Yeah, he could have committed.
He did, didn't he? I watched it.
He takes a little stutter step, doesn't he? He doesn't quite fully commit. That. Yeah, he's got a bit scared.
What height is Crouch? So like
6'7".
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And he's looking good. These last few games, he's been banging them in. And I actually thought his career was over probably about a year ago
because
wasn't training well. Apparently, wasn't thing. And Mark Hughes says he's an absolute credit to his profession. Yesterday, over these past month or so, he's been playing really well. So, first half, Stoke were brilliant. Give as much credit as you can to Stoke.
Sexy Stoke.
But Sunderland were again just woeful individual mistakes. And, Moisey's coming out saying, players have got to be held accountable. It's like, dude, you pick them. Like, you put the name on the team sheet, pick somebody else. Like, because he's repeating himself every single week. I didn't think the performance was that bad, but just individual mistakes. And it's really hard to get a result when you're 3-0 down. Well, no, you know what, Sherlock? Yeah. If any team's 3-0 down, it's hard to get a result.
Right.
Unless you're Arsenal against Bournemouth. But, it's... If I was him, I'd just be like, go to his academy and just be like, are you a central defender? Yeah. All right, kid, come and play in the first team. Can't be any worse than the so-called experienced veterans that we got. And if it wasn't for Defoe, they wouldn't have a chance in hell of getting out of the trouble they're in.
Yeah.
But again, he had one shot, one on target, one goal.
That might be too much for Defoe, though.
Yeah, 36 years
especially
old.
Especially if nobody's playing around you. That's it.
The fountain of youth.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Moving on to the next game, your boys, Liberty Stadium, playing against Swansea.
Take it away, mate.
Yeah, take it away, Gunners. I was watching the game, 10 o'clock game, the first half, I actually almost felt as if Swansea were the better side. It was a very physical match. But Giroud again, 5-5 games and Giroud. Thing that worries me is he was kind of limping at the end of the first half and they were about to bring on Oxlade-Chamberlain. I was like, no, let's see the last couple minutes of the half out. Look at him at halftime, see what happens. They put him back on the field, 15, 20 minutes later, comes out. Worried about his status. Second half, we definitely did look a little bit better, but we're gifted two goals. Alex Iwobi, both strikes, turned into own goals. I'm not sure what the committee decided.
No, both of them were OGs, yeah.
The first one was pretty crazy because it was just a low cross into the box that popped into one of the Swansea defenders and then just looped over our former boy, Fabianski, who actually I had forgotten his last match for us was a 2014 FA Cup final.
Right, yeah.
So, fair play to him. I was sad to see that happen, but a goal in the back of the net, was glad. Thought Sanchez's finish for the fourth goal was pretty good. Was glad to see that Danny Welbeck got a run on. I was actually hoping that when they took Giroud off that they'd just go ahead and put Welbeck in instead of Oxlade-Chamberlain. Right. I love Oxlade-Chamberlain, but he started the season off well, and it just seems like in the last month or two...
He's a hit-and-miss player.
He's such a hit-and-miss player. He did, however, stick the ball in for Giroud against you boys late in the game.
Yeah, I know.
Beating Rashford. Months ago.
We remember.
But Sanchez looked very... We hardly ever bring Sanchez off. And there's a good reason for it, and you saw that. You saw that the other day. Yeah. So I'm a little worried about that. And there's talk of him renewing his contract in more advanced stages. And I've also seen some rumors that Wenger's ready to renew. So
I've heard that he's leaving. This might be his last
This
season.
Is the thing. As soon as Arsenal string like three decent results together, it's like, oh, let's sign Arsene up for another year. It's like, just wait till the end of the year. But my thing with the Sanchez, I like the fact that he acted like that. They were 4-0 up, and they're bringing him off to give another player a bit of a run out. And he's like, he's going mental. He's not happy about it. But I like that. Like, he just loves playing football. He doesn't care.
He doesn't want to be off the pitch.
So I say, what? It's 4-0. He could have scored all four goals, and he was still acted the same way. It's just, you know, it's good to see. I like.
There's actually a funny story of him from his days at Udinese. He was at training, locked his keys in the truck at training, lived a couple miles away, a good bit away from the stadium. He ends up running through the rain back home to get the keys to take back to the stadium to unlock his truck.
I like him.
All right, well, on that note, guys, the time is coming up to 6:40. We'll be right back. All right, guys, we're back. So moving on to the next game. This was an awesome game this morning. Man City versus Everton.
Says the United fan.
Well, we'll get to the United bit.
It was a great game.
Yeah. I don't even know where to start with this game, to be honest. Man City were dreadful. They got outplayed. People were like nutmegging them, and they looked like they were struggling to keep the ball. And like when they are not top four contenders.
Man City looked as interested as their manager did. Absolutely uninterested. And he came out after and said, "Yeah, we're going to work harder." It's like, well, no. What's the point of saying that after the game? Work harder in training the week before a big game, like going to Everton, and
they don't tackle in training.
They don't. It's ridiculous. Like, and Pep's just like, there was like a 30-second clip. NBC Sports. The camera focuses on him for like 30 seconds. He's got his eyes closed, looking down after the Morales second goal goes in. Like he hasn't got a clue what to do. Like
I don't think he does.
Like he's never been in a situation like this where he just doesn't win every week or he doesn't have the quality performance. He's probably a guy that doesn't mind losing 1-0 if his team has played exactly the way that he wants them to. They've smashed the bar, smashed the post, 5 cleared off the line and 30 shots, but they've still lost 1-0. He's probably all right with that.
Didn't
because
he?
You get those days. But he's not used to a team that he has this idea of playing, which comes from two great teams, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, and trying to implement it into Manchester City, who, let's be honest, in recent months have only proved that they have one world-class player, and that's your centre-forward, Aguero. But if you don't have the players to back him up, if you don't have...
De Bruyne has gone missing.
Yeah, absolutely disappeared off the face of the earth, any. And if you don't, like you say, if you don't have a De Bruyne to get the ball to Aguero, put him in these positions where you give the ball to Aguero in the penalty area, the guy scores. But if you can't get him the ball, he might as well not be on the pitch. Just another very good player. But the biggest thing as well, one of the things I saw online that people are joking about is that Pep Guardiola doesn't know what to do now because he made a big decision in letting Joe Hart go, got rid of his goalkeeper. And now he's brought in a goalkeeper that appears to be frightened of footballs. Yeah. Doesn't he? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I thought, I don't know if anybody else saw this. They ran it a couple times, either last weekend or it was right around the holiday season, inside the mind of Pep with the interview.
Yeah.
And he's like, "You'll find me on the golf course." It's like, "Yeah, buddy, you might be on the golf course a little bit sooner than you initially
thought."
Yeah,
I know, right? Like, I think he wants to.
And talking about retirement and just, you know, like, week in, week out, as it goes on, I'm wondering, like, can he stomach it? Is he up for it?
Well,
I don't think he knew what he was getting into.
No, well, that's what I said to Andy before we came on the air, is that he walks into a Barcelona team with probably the best academy that we're going to see that Europe's ever had in the past 20 years, I say.
Yeah, probably.
Inherits that amazing team. It's not hard. I said to him, it's not hard to have the job of walking into the dressing room and being right, Messi, you're up front. Neymar, you can play out wide. Mascherano, Piqué at the back. Like, you know,
well, he didn't have Neymar, but
yeah, you know what I mean, though. Yeah. He's just because he had Xavi, Iniesta. You know what I mean? It's just to me, that's it's a bit of an easy gig, and then you're just going to try and bring that same
mentality.
And look, everybody knows there's you know, at that time there were two teams in La Liga, Real Madrid, Barcelona. It's not like that in England. It's not like that. The teams that, you know, there are. You know, there are only let's say six teams maybe that realistically can win the Premier League, yeah?
And it used to only be about four.
Yeah, and it used to be that. But the teams that can't win it still play a massive influence on actually who does win it.
Right.
La Liga has always kind of been one with who wins El Clasico home and away.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like if Real Madrid win that home and away, Real Madrid tend to win the league that year. If Barcelona win it home and away, Barcelona tend to win the league that year. It doesn't happen like that in England. And he hasn't really understood that, and he doesn't understand that he had world-class players, like top-quality players at Barcelona that just knew how to play for, knew the Barcelona way. Man City doesn't have, like, an identity on how to, the way they want to play football. He's going to try and stamp that on there. But the way he looks right now, he's not. It might be a 2.5 year, 3 year process.
Yeah,
I think he says that because that gives him a bit of takes a bit of weight off his shoulders when he says it. Hey, this might be a 3 year process for these guys to get playing. He won't be there for 3 years. If they carry on like this, he won't even. He'll be gone in the summer.
Yeah. And I mean, let's look at this historically. Blue Moon Rising. You know, City have really only been a power in the EPL
2009.
Exactly. You know,
I actually watched that movie. Like, I haven't as a United fan, but I watched it like maybe only 2 weeks ago. It was
But yeah, I mean, as far you know, like it was funny when we played City. Unfortunately, we got drubbed, but Wenger was like, "They're good clients of mine." You know, they've for years, even in their, you know, coming up and becoming that new club, they've bought players from other teams, and only now are they looking at their academy. It's very different from how Barcelona does business to how Man City does business.
Right.
And even, you know...
But you say that.
Bayern Munich, same thing. Like, their academy, that's fine. I don't know what their academy is like, but they always get the best German players.
Yeah.
So he's now at a club that are Johnny Come Lately's new kids on the block, and I think he's finding it out the hard way that
I don't think
it's going to take some time.
See, that's what I find annoying about City fans, though. Manchester United, class of 92, is a classic example of how we brought players in. We won the Champions League, the Premiership, the FA Cup, whatever, and we ran in the money that way. And then few years down the line, when we really need it, we go and spend, right? City get bought by, the rich sheikh and all the rest of it. And then
that's
the
ad, yeah.
Right. So we've been saying for the last, 7, 8 years, you have no history, you've basically been buying players, and they've
been relegated twice.
Right, and then they're looking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I first started watching, like, and being an Arsenal fan, it was like when City came up, I was like, oh, this is a win. We're good, you know? Yeah. They were only much better than like Bolton, like from the same area.
And then
you know?
Man United goes out and buys Di Maria for $100 million, and they're like, "Oh, look at you spending all your money talking about that." And I'm like, "No, it's different. We made that money ourselves."
I don't think. Yeah, but the thing is, as well, but you say stuff like that, yeah. United constantly are the number one profiting team in the whole of England, so we have revenues that exceed like I think it's like $3.2 billion, yeah, if we're going to put it in dollars worth. $3.2 billion. City aren't even in, like, the top 20 in Europe.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Because they have no established kind of network. They just go, okay, I want to buy a player for I want to buy a player for 50 million. This guy writes a check, and they go and buy a player. There's no, like, real business. I'm sure it's changing now a little bit, but
I would say Noel Gallagher's royalties from What's the Story Morning Glory are probably up there with City's revenue.
Let's move on from the City bashing, and let's just give credit to Everton.
Oh, right. No, okay, yeah, give credit to Everton.
Let's,
yeah,
you know, let's be impartial.
And that Davis goal was absolutely brilliant.
Oh, what a splitter.
If you want
those
to see...
Those two defenders.
Yeah, if you want to see a young man make a Gael Clichy, how much did they buy him from you for? Probably 20-something?
No way. Much less.
Really?
I would imagine much less.
And then Yaya Toure, supposedly one of the best midfielders in the world. And this guy just absolutely does them both. Like
pinballs them.
Yeah, and then John Stones, 50 million defender, shoves him to the ground. The kid gets straight back up, walks around him, and slots it past Bravo. He's happy,
it's funny,
happy
the
scared football.
The last goal that was scored was by a youngster Lookman from their academy, and my friend texted me, and he's like, yeah, the last guy that scored that goal for Everton looked like he was 18, and I was like, yeah, that's because he was.
Yeah.
See, the thing about Bravo, though, he looks lost. Every time I see him, I think of like Benny Hill music. I hear do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-
happens with Bravo, again, Bravo used to be behind a very set defense. Pique, Mascherano, Danny Alves.
Get the deck chair on, just have a few drinks.
Drop back or whoever. Do you know what I mean? That's like, you literally didn't have to do anything.
Well, look at Victor Valdez in the league. I mean, he hasn't been the knight in shining armor.
No, he's been good recently, actually. I'll give Valdez some props. I agree with you, because I think Valdez was severely one of the most overrated goalkeepers in Europe.
Absolutely.
Back in the day when he was there. But actually, in the past 2 or 3 months, I've gone, you know what?
I always thought Ter Stegen was their best goalkeeper the last couple of years.
Just a quick note, though. There was an incident between Lukaku and Otamendi.
Yeah.
Does anyone know what actually took place there?
Yeah,
Lukaku knocks him over.
Otamendi kind of has a history, it seems like. He seems kind of like, you know, like a basher, kind of, you know, wants to put himself forward. And
it's because his positioning is shocking,
yeah.
I'd do the same thing if I couldn't read the game as well. But, I didn't see. I heard you, I was actually driving, I think, when you guys, I think one of you boys sent a text out on the blokes on the bench thing about, I think they both got yellow cards or something
like
that.
Yeah, they did.
I didn't see it. I didn't see that, but.
All right, so let's leave that game then. Let's move on to the last one. Old Trafford, Manchester United versus Liverpool. Pogba.
It was a bad
shocking day.
You know what though? He's been pretty decent for us over the past couple of months. So everyone has an off day. Today was definitely his off day. And
Michael Oliver was right there to make the call, though.
Yeah.
So it's,
oh yeah, definitely.
His definite pen. Great pen from James Milner. And the one thing I hated is the commentator when he scored going that Liverpool haven't lost when James Milner has been on the score sheet.
Yes.
And I was like, well,
that doesn't mean nothing.
I was like, there's a first time for everything, pal.
Right.
And we had so many chances.
I thought tactically one of the interesting things of today was they brought in that young kid, Alexander, whose uncle or something actually works for, I think he's like a high up in Manchester United's office.
I can't remember
whatever.
What they said.
And,
yeah, they said he used to do
he's gotten praise from Gerard in his autobiography.
He's like a chairman
well,
or something.
Well, apparently the kid grew up right outside of Millwall. Like, he could literally see the training ground from his window. But I thought he looked good today. And the thing that interested me was that when the team sheet. Sorry, when the
no,
team sheet.
No, I just wanted to clarify that if he was in Millwall, he would need the world's strongest.
Biggest binoculars.
Yeah, binoculars. But Malwood, yeah, you're right.
Okay.
The training ground. For
so,
Liverpool.
Anyways, I was surprised when the team sheets came out and we saw this. I was like, man, like, I was about to text you guys. I forgot to, but it's like, you got this 18-year-old right back. It's like, you got to go after him, and Martial never seemed to do it. And the thing that I thought was interesting, too, is, like, why not play Milner at right back and bring in, you know, Alberto or Moreno? And they just, it worked out for them. And the kid actually looked
Emre Can
really
was a
good.
Massive help for him today. Emre Can
I think he should start for them every game.
Emre Can helped that kid out a lot today, and so did Henderson, to be fair. To be fair, give Liverpool, they came out with a
good game plan.
They executed it really well. They chased in packs. There was one shot where Martial gets the ball and there's four Liverpool players around him.
Yeah.
And it's like, They worked so hard.
Man United and Liverpool just congested that midfield area, and it's just became a bit of a joke. Really,
they did. And
somebody
then
had to change the tactics.
Well, that's the thing. And once we went 1-0 down, and we bring Rooney on for Carrick, it was only going to get worse for us, for United fans, with Carrick not being in there, sitting in the deeper role.
Game because, definitely opened up.
Yeah, Liverpool pretty much overran us a little bit in that midfield. But to be fair, when you think back, there's only a couple of half chances, I'd say, for Liverpool, and the best chances came to Man United. Mignolet pulled off a couple of good saves in the first half, and second half, you know, Mkhitaryan, that ball across Martial, tried to do some kind of little heel flick, didn't quite come off, but I think we were well worthy of the point in the end. Yeah. I know it was like probably offside for
exactly. I was just about to bring that up. Yeah, I mean, as far as like, the commentators, I think it was Graham Lasseau, made a good point. He was like, looking back at that video, it looks like it's offsides. But the linesman couldn't catch up twice. When the ball go back.
Yeah,
twice,
it went back, forward, back, and then forward. What's the linesman supposed to do? Like, jump 6 yards here and then jump 6 yards back over here?
Right, and the Ibrahimovic, the header, not to get in the way from it, was a really difficult kind of...
That's a tough skill, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Jeremy Lamb's boy Fellaini getting that first crack.
I know.
All right, guys. So that's pretty much all the games this weekend. The table, very quickly run down. Chelsea are still sitting pretty on top, 52 points. Tottenham are on 45, along with Liverpool. Arsenal on 44. Man City right behind that on 42. Man United on 40. Everton 33. And then, from Man United to Everton, there's that drop from 40 to 33. West Brom are on 8 and 29 points. And Stoke are 9th and 27. And Burnley are sitting in 10th spot on 26. And then, of course, the bottom three, 18th, we have Hull City and 16. And then both in 15, respectively, we have Sunderland and Swansea. And I think it's just going to rotate through those three. I'm
with you on that.
I don't see anyone moving.
I think Palace, you know, it'll be interesting to see who does the best at navigating that bottom half. Like, those teams now that are in that bottom five, let's say, should only be focusing on the five teams ahead of them. When do we play them? How do we beat them? Forget about the teams in the top half, because
we're never going
to write them off. Get to 40 points.
Yeah, maybe get a cheeky draw or something.
Yeah.
You know?
A little cheeky draw.
Get a cheeky draw.
All right, so let's go through the fixture list for Saturday.
Yeah.
This coming Saturday, Liverpool versus Swansea.
Smashing.
Liverpool versus Swansea.
Liverpool, innit?
I think they might have a draw there.
Is it at the Liberty?
I'm kidding.
No, I think it's at Anfield.
It is. Liverpool are going to beat them. Bournemouth versus Watford.
That's going to be a good match.
I would have said Bournemouth, but I can see that being 0-0.
Crystal Palace versus Everton. I think Crystal Palace will get thrashed.
I think Everton will win, yeah.
Is it at Goodison?
No, it's at Sallust.
I want to reiterate the fact that I said Goodison was a tough place to go after my boys lost. And Man United, City saw that today.
You don't have to say that to a United fan. We find it difficult playing there too.
Yeah.
Middlesbrough versus West Ham.
I reckon I'm going to go West Ham.
Stoke versus Manchester United.
Where is it at?
It's in Stoke's ground.
That is not the easiest place to play.
I'll go hopefully. 1-0. Yeah, I'll take a 1-0 right now.
Get out of there. Yeah.
West Brom versus Sunderland.
West Brom, 3-1.
Man City versus Spurs. Spurs.
I'm going to go Spurs. I reckon, you know what?
City.
If City play like they did today, that lackluster, you can't 7-0. Do that against Spurs.
Yeah.
Spurs might absolutely drop them 5-0.
Sunday. Southampton versus Leicester City. This is an interesting one because both teams are not doing well, right?
No, I think that'll be a boring game, actually. I reckon that'll probably be 1-1.
Contradicts everything I say, people.
I still think Southampton will probably win that one.
Okay, Arsenal versus Burnley.
Arsenal.
Is it at
we
the
might
Emirates?
Not have Giroud,
it's
though.
Emirates. It's at the Emirates. I'll go Burnley 3-0.
Chelsea versus Hull City.
Put a cheeky fiver on that one, Ryan.
Don't. Chelsea versus Hull?
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be... That could be the biggest upset.
You think?
No. Well, let's see if Costa's still there. Might be week.
This is one of those games, yeah. It's either going to be 1-0 Chelsea, really uninspiring. It's going to be 6-0 Chelsea, or it'll end up being like 1-1.
If I was Hull City manager, I'd say, look, there's no chance of us getting to that top spot. These guys here, like you said, those three are just kind of...
Yeah. Nick a point and get out of there.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, that is it for this week. Thank you very much to my guests, obviously, Ryan.
One thing before we go. Real Madrid, we're going to do the La Liga results, but Real Madrid's 40-game unbeaten streak is gone.
Unlucky, boys.
All right, guys.
Sorry, Zidane.
We'll be back next Sunday. All right, bye.
You've been listening to Blokes on the Bench with your host, Andy Richardson, on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. Join us again next Sunday at 6 for another edition and feed us back at facebook.com/blokesonthebench.